Welcome to the 21st episode of A Change of the Champs. My name is Ryan Lowe, and my goal is to educate as many people as possible about different issues impacting our world by interviewing experts who can teach us how to make a difference. Whether people want to recognize it or not, our world is built to be diverse, from the humans who inhabit it to the cultures and traditions that guide us. However, with diversity comes differences. With differences come discrimination, inevitably leading to loss of representation and voice. Luckily, there are activists, storytellers, and artists who assure that the least represented get their say in the world's evolution, showcase the beauty of their culture and traditions, shed light on their plight, and share their stories across the globe. In today's episode, we will continue passing these stories along to you. So today, I am proud to introduce Lana Wong, or as I call her, Auntie Lana. Auntie Lana has done many amazing things, such as the Shoot Project or her work with Shout Mouse Press. She is a true champion of representation across the globe. She's an artist, an activist, a storyteller, a voice for the underrepresented, and a role model for me. So today, I'm honored to introduce Auntie Lana. So hello, Auntie Lana. How are you today?
Okay. Hello, Ryan. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. I'm so honored.
It's great to see you.
So nice to see you.
So my first question today is, you've had many roles throughout your career that led to social change. So did you always know that this is what you wanted to do?
Not at all. I mean, sometimes I wonder if I even still know what I want to do. But what I would say is that I think my experience living in Nairobi in the late 1990s, before you were born, Ryan, making me feel old. But that was a really pivotal moment because before moving to Kenya, I was working in the art, photography, and television worlds in London. But my time in Africa really inspired me to figure out a way to combine my creative background with social activism.
Yeah. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So I think another key experience that kind of unlocked this whole passion of mine that seems to have been a bit of a thread in my world was, you mentioned in the intro, the Shoot Back Project. So in 1997, I did kind of start something called Shoot Back, which is a youth photography and development project in the Nairobi slums that I really wanted to start to try and empower young Kenyans to tell their own stories. I have a photography background, and so I did teach photography and writing to a group of boys and girls in Nairobi's biggest slum called Mathari. And I worked with a group of 11 to 17-year-olds for 2 years, and then my students' photos and their writings about their lives in the slum became the basis of a 200-page book, an international touring exhibition of their photographs and their words, and also a documentary film. So I'm super proud of my Kenyan family and am still in touch with many of my students to this day.
First of all, let me say, that is so cool. International exhibition, and that you're still in touch with them. That's 25 years ago. That's really cool. But you were talking about how you wanted to give the Kenyan children their own voice and their own chance to talk about it. Can we talk about what motivated you to start this and how you came up with using a camera as a voice?
Absolutely. Well, I certainly would not claim that idea of empowering people to use their own voices through photography as my own. I was inspired by many others, but I would call out Jim Hubbard and Wendy Ewald as role models of mine who really wanted to kind of unlock the storytelling from authentic voices. Because I guess an issue you talked about, you framed this this conversation about the whole issue of representation. And so in documentary photography, there is always this issue of subjectivity and kind of wanting to be, this neutral portrayal of the so-called truth, or certainly that's often the aim in news and journalism, but we know that the world has changed in so many crazy ways. in the past 20 years. But anyway, just to say that behind the motivation behind this project was really about having authentic storytellers at the core, whether that was using photography or words. And so as a Chinese American woman walking in an African slum, you can imagine I was a bit of an alien, and I was, for many of those young people, I was the first, you know, Chinese person that they had met or seen. And so I will say we had lots of kind of funny walks around the slum, where often people assume, because their only conception of Asian people were old bootleg videos of Bruce Lee movies. So they would often greet me with "Hi-ya!" and like big karate chops, and they would assume that I was a black belt master just because of my black hair and my Asian face. So for me to pretend to know what a life in an African slum is by writing about it or by taking photographs of it didn't seem to, for me, the best way to tell the story of this slum, especially as, you know, I didn't know how long I was living there. So really the kind of the germ of the idea was really this participatory approach and this kind of process called photo voice, which has, you know, in the ensuing kind of 20 odd years has really, really taken off. But I will say, I do believe that we were the first project or kind of organized project on the African continent to really try and empower young people with the power of photography to tell their own stories. Because I was fortunate enough to get funding from the Ford Foundation to do this work and to help start this project. And so they went on to fund many more projects of this kind, as have many other organizations around the world, to really get stories from the ground from people who are living it.
So all of these amazing photos and writing excerpts, they were compiled into a book. How was that book received?
Well, I just realized, I know this is a podcast, but I realized, have you ever even seen Shoot Back?
Yeah, we have a copy. I was using it for research somewhere around here.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, no, I am thrilled to say that, it was received very well. We had a very exciting opening exhibition at the Barbican Gallery in London, and then this exhibition that kind of accompanied the book went around the world to, I think, over 12 countries all over the world. And then we also had interest in a German production company that actually wanted to mimic the process that we used to produce this book. And so the producer actually trained several of my Shootback students on video making and had them film their own lives for a year. They helped them cut that into a film about, again, their lives in living in a pretty tough African slum for a year, and all the things that happened in their lives, you know, the good and the bad. So pretty emotional stuff. Should dig that link out if it's still around.
That's really amazing. So what have been some of the long-term impacts of the project?
Well, looking back over two decades, I'm really proud to say that the project is still ongoing. I should certainly give credit that I didn't start this kind of just all by myself. I was collaborating with a local Kenyan nonprofit organization called the Mathare Youth Sports Association, which is one of the world's largest youth sports and development organizations. That's a whole nother story which we could talk about, but basically, in a nutshell, one of my first kind of freelance jobs as a photographer myself in Kenya was to photograph the work of the Mathare Youth Sports Association. It's called MYSA for short. And they basically were mobilizing youth soccer leagues that were all youth run for boys and girls from like under 10s all the way to under 18s. And then to earn points for their teams, and the in the league standings, the teams would have to do community service projects on the weekends, which would include, you know, cleaning up the slum. If you've seen some of the pictures in the book, I mean, you'll see that they're just heaps of trash and open sewers. And so there would be these community cleanups that the kids would be mobilized to do, but also motivated to do, because we knew that it would help their league and their team standings in the league. So, but also embedded into that sports kind of framework was a whole health kind of education program, where they also trained some of the young coaches and young players to be HIV and AIDS kind of peer-to-peer counselors. And so they were really trying to use the kind of motivating factor that sports brings to young people to also teach them all kinds of different things for their community, for their own health. And so that whole model was so powerful to see in person and document for me as a photographer, but also to meet these families and to go to the practices that were all run by young people and see some of the AIDS and HIV, you know, trainings that were again run by young people after some of the soccer practices. So I was so taken by this whole experience of and this was just a job, you know, to photograph these young people. But I left that job thinking, gosh, what could I do, or what could I bring to this group that is doing so much good work, but then there's so much need. And given that I had photography as a skill, I thought, well, wouldn't it be amazing to try and bring that to a group of these young people so that they could really document the story of their own lives and tell it to the world. And so we somehow managed to do that. And I'm thrilled to say, to kind of get back to your first question about the long-term impacts of the project, out of my original kind of core group of 30 odd students, I would say there are at least 10 of them who have gone on to become professional photographers or filmmakers in some shape or form. And I would like to single out one of my star students, Julius Mwelu, who has not only won international awards for his photography, but he is also the staff photographer for a UN agency that's headquartered in Nairobi called UN Habitat, which is dedicated to cities and human settlements. And he has also, in his spare time, started his own organization called the Mwelu Foundation to teach photography, film, and life skills to a whole nother set of young people, a whole new generation of young storytellers and image makers in another part of the slum. So I am just so proud of him and so thrilled that this whole legacy of youth empowerment through kind of creative and visual means has continued.
I was just about to say, you must be really proud of him.
I am indeed, yeah.
And you should be really proud of yourself for passing on photography and this whole idea of change making to the next generation.
Oh, well, thank you. It's an honor. I mean, I've certainly learned much more from my students, I think. So it's a huge life lesson that continues to this day for me.
Yeah. So you also introduced me to Shoutmouse Press, and I have been reading many of the books written by the talented young authors. First of all, can you share with the audience what Shoutmouse Press is and why it was created?
I can indeed, and I'm thrilled that you are an avid reader of Shoutmouse Press books, so thank you for being a young ambassador. So Shoutmouse Press is a wonderful DC nonprofit I'm on the board of right now, but used to also work with them. But it is really such an amazing alignment with actually what I was trying to do with Shoot Back. The founder, Kathy Crutcher, here in DC is a real kind of soul sister. And basically the core mission of Shoutmouse Press is to amplify underheard youth voices by creating diverse and inclusive books. So it's a nonprofit writing and publishing program. And Shoutmouse publishes and sells books created by young authors and illustrators from marginalized communities and also continues the support to these authors to train them to be leaders in their own community for change. So in just 7 years, we've published over 500 authors from immigrant communities, incarcerated young people, Black, Muslim, Latinx, and other marginalized youth in the greater DC area. And just to give you a few numbers, there are over 100,000 books in circulation
wow.
in schools, libraries, and homes around the world. So I'm so happy that you are amongst the readers out there. So just more on the learning crisis that is facing us today. I don't know if you realize, but at the height of COVID, 90% of the world's students, so that's more than 1.6 billion young people, had their schooling disrupted. And in some parts of the world, schools were closed for nearly 2 years. So for example, in Uganda, schools only reopened this January after 22 months. As you can imagine, the learning losses are really severe in different parts of the world that aren't as fortunate as our neighborhoods here and over where you are. But the digital divide has also widened the education equity gap. So even pre-COVID, there were 260 million children who weren't in school around the world and millions more who are in school but aren't actually learning. So not to be too depressing, but a recent report that the Education Commission was a part of found that roughly 3 out of 4 young people, and we're talking globally, will not have the skills they need to thrive or to get a job. So that's, you know, well over 700 million young people who won't be equipped for the world of work in the future. And so these are numbers that I don't know that... you know, that the world is necessarily aware of outside of the kind of global development bubble. So hopefully we can get more attention and more priority shown to really raising the game in the education system and education systems around the world.
Yeah, well, such a loss of education is so terrible, but it gives us more motivation to make sure they do get to learn more and they do get to hear more about the stories around the world.
Yep. I mean, without education, we won't have the doctors, the engineers, the nurses, the teachers, the entrepreneurs, the artists, or the activists like yourself to get us into a brighter and bolder and better space. So
yeah, the world really is built on education.
Well said. Well said, Ryan. And I will just quote, if you would allow me to, a beautiful part of our mission statement that I think really encapsulates this conversation. But this is just a small portion of the Shoutmouse Press mission statement. We believe everyone has a story to tell. We believe everyone has the ability to tell it. We believe by listening to the stories we tell each other, whether true or imagined, we are learning empathy, humility, community, and grace.
That's beautiful. It really is. One of the things I love most about these books is just, what you were saying, being able to hear these non-marginalized stories made from the authors and these perspectives themselves. So what are some of your top recommendations for the audience who might be interested in buying books from Shoutmouse Press?
Oh, that's a tough question, but I can pick a few books that I feel like for your kind of peers who may be listening to this, and also obviously, you know, parents and any ages really. But a really important book that I would kind of single out from the Shoutmouse Press catalog would be The Day Tejan Got Shot. It's a really important book that addresses the Black Lives Matter movement in a very eye-opening way. We actually kind of launched the writing process of this project in 2015, following the senseless deaths of Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, I mean, and way too many others. So it was just when Black Lives Matter movement was gaining steam. But we had 10 Black teenage girls start writing a novel, so a fiction piece about race and police brutality. And so for 2 years, they spent Friday afternoons writing about the shooting of an unarmed 16-year-old Black boy by a white police officer and the impact it had on the whole community. And so for each chapter, each of those girls put herself in the shoes of one of 10 characters. So these characters included the victim, included the police officer, a witness, the mother, a friend. And so each chapter explored that event from the perspective of the different characters. But they were all written by middle school girls on Friday afternoon. So it was a colossal project, and it really paid off because it was such a powerful book that it won, you know, some literary awards, but it also is now in every DC public school and more than 3,000 schools, libraries, and homes around the country. So if you haven't added that one to your bookshelf, I would encourage you to check that one out.
That's amazing. And it's, what's it called again?
The Day Tajon, T-A-J-O-N, Tajon Got Shot.
Definitely check that out.
I might just pull out two others, if you'll allow me.
Oh, yeah.
That I think you would enjoy. There's one called I Am the Night Sky.
Oh, I read that one. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. So that's, for your listeners, it's another award-winning book on the Shoutmouse Press list, but it's creative responses about being young and Muslim in today's America. And it was produced in partnership with 10 Muslim American teenagers from the Next Wave Muslim Initiative. So a really interesting read. And then another one, in case you haven't seen it, is Voces Sin Fronteras. Sí. You've read that one as well? Yeah, great. So that's been a real hit for both elementary and middle school and high school, actually, readers, because it's actually a comic bilingual memoir. So yeah. We worked with 16 immigrant youth from the Latin American Youth Center, and they wrote and illustrated really personal stories, as you would have read, about their own immigration to America. But it's bilingual. So if you're also studying Spanish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yo trataba de leer la parte de español.
Oh, qué bueno, qué bueno, fantástico. I will ask, actually, Ryan, I don't know if I've ever asked you, have you, I love the fact that you are reading these books, but have you actually shared them with your classmates or your own school librarians?
Yeah, actually, we did get a few of the Shoutmouse Press books into my school.
Oh, great, wow. Thank you. That's wonderful. And have you gotten any responses from teachers or any of your friends?
I'm not sure, but
I can ask my mom.
Great. That's good.
Yeah, well, they deserve it.
But actually, a little coda I would tell you about the Voces Sin Fronteras, and another part of Shoutmouse that I think you would enjoy knowing about is that after these books are published, we don't just kind of say, well, you know, thank you very much. Shoutmouse Press really wants to invest in the kind of leadership potential that the whole book writing process helps to unlock for these young writers. And so we often get author talk requests from schools and even colleges and universities and other kind of folks who are just interested in, as you know, we're talking about these kind of own voices writers. And so it's been a great opportunity for these young people to learn how to present their own work, to talk about their own stories, and to also work on public speaking and also advocacy, you know, issues that are important to them in their own communities. So our authors have spoken to schools and events kind of nationwide, I guess, thanks to COVID, with the whole, you know, Zoom kind of shift. We have managed to get our authors to speak to classrooms all over the country, and with the Voces Sin Fronteras authors in particular, through book sales and related contributions, I will report that we've been able to raise more than $30,000 in scholarship money for immigrant youth, and also copies of that book to children in immigration custody. Because I will say a kind of underlying theme for many of the immigrant writers of Voces Sin Fronteras was really wanting young immigrants like themselves to know that they are not alone, that, you know, they understand the struggles and the losses and the stories that that have brought them here to this country.
Yeah, it is really great that you're giving all these people a chance to talk about their stories and then sharing it with other people across the world who need to hear them. So first of all, can I just ask, where did the name Shoutmouse Press come from?
Huh. That is a good question. I would have to ask the founder, Kathy, but I think if you have seen the logo, which is a little mouse with a megaphone, certainly the idea is that, you know, often mice kind of scurry around and, you know, they're somewhat invisible, or you hope they're invisible if they're in your house until the exterminator comes. But anyway, I think the idea is that the mouse, you want, with the megaphone of their own voice, can also, you know, create a much more powerful impact than their size. So that, you know, giving that megaphone is the platform that Shoutmouse is hoping to provide. But actually, as we're talking on this too, I did want to also just touch on the fact, because I think, again, on this whole issue of representation, that you would be interested in it. But Kathy really launched Shoutmouse Press in response to a kind of staggering statistic and kind of issue in children's and young adult literature. Basically, in a country where half of all five-year-olds belong to a racial or ethnic minority, meaning in the U.S., only 10% of children's books featured characters that looked like them. So that means that...
10%.
Yes. So there is another statistic that nearly 80% of book creators identify as white. And so this lack of authentic representation, especially in today's culture, can obviously really this lack of representation and diversity and inclusion within children's literature is certainly a kind of key issue that Shoutmouse Press is trying to address by empowering young people from marginalized and underrepresented groups to be able to tell their own stories and publish them. So I will say, coming off of my experience in Kenya with Shootback, it just made kind of perfect and beautiful sense for me to get involved with Shoutmouse Press. So I'm so grateful to Kathy for our collaboration and for being a part of the Shoutmouse journey after Shootback. So it's a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah. So for some young activists like me who might feel discouraged by the pace of change from global leaders, what's your advice for us?
Well, I would just say, first of all, keep on fighting. Your voice absolutely matters. So you really shouldn't be afraid to speak up, to speak out, to keep advocating for the issues that you care about. And I would certainly congratulate you, Ryan, for all the work that you're doing and for even the initiative that you've shown in starting this podcast.
It's thank you so much.
Amazing thing that you've done. So congratulations to you, and keep on. Change doesn't always happen quickly. It's a long, long game. So
yeah,
keep up the fight.
I will. So what are some other projects you're working on right now?
Well, my day job is as the director of communications for something called the Education Commission, which is a kind of global initiative working to ensure that every child in the world gets a quality education. So we are chaired by the former UK Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, and we have this group of amazing commissioners that include former heads of state, three Nobel laureates, and experts in all kinds of global issues. And Shakira is also on our kind of board of commissioners. But basically, we're just trying to figure out how to ensure that every child in the world gets a quality education. And sadly, that is a pretty difficult challenge right now.
Yeah. Well, you really do many amazing things about representation. I had no idea about your day job. So my last question to you is, what do you think is a social or environmental issue right now that's not being discussed enough, and how can we bring it to light?
Well, given my day job, I really would just want to hammer home the education crisis that I think really isn't getting, sadly, the attention that it deserves, especially in the midst of COVID, climate change, conflict. I think, unfortunately, education sometimes has been a more of a silent crisis that I think you will agree will absolutely impact your generation and those come if leaders don't make it a priority. So I know we are running out of time, but I would like to just make sure that we add the beautiful Nelson Mandela quote that education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world.
It really is. It really is. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I've learned so much about NYSA and Shoutmouse Press, its mission. So never stop fighting for the people who can't fight for themselves, Auntie Lana.
Oh, and you too. I would say the same. Thank you so much, Ryan.
No, thank you, Auntie Lana.
So that's it for A Change of the Chance, episode 21. I hope you learned something, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.